The purpose of tonight is to get us all thinking for ourselves rather than deciding what we should think. And even more importantly, that we don't tell our clients what to think or what to do, that we get them thinking for themselves. And can anybody, and those of some of you have been coming for a long time, why do we not want people to do what we tell them to do? Why do we want them to think for themselves? What's the number one reason for that? Abdul, Marcin? What was that, Abdul?
Be around forever because they won't do it.
That's possible, yes. everybody, how old are you, Abdul? 19 or 20?
19.
19. So you don't like being told what to do, do you?
Yes.
There's a really big reason why we don't want to tell people what to do. Marcin, do you remember from one of the workshops?
Yeah, because the change has to come from them.
Correct. And if I tell you what to do and you think I'm the expert, and then somebody else comes along who's got more degrees than me or more ripped abdominals than me or they've got more life experience than me, you might then change your mind about me and go to them because they're the new expert. Would that be fair enough? So what if people are thinking for themselves and they decide for themselves what works and what doesn't, then they're more likely to stick to it for the rest of their lives. And I'm asking a very special request as a fitness professional, that if you're really doing this because you want to make a difference in people's lives and you really want people to make a change, then we really have to get them to decide for themselves what's going to work for the rest of their lives. So from a fat loss point of view, what's the fastest, safest, easiest way, or what exercises do we have to do to get fat loss for our clients and obviously for ourselves if we need it? And the two big questions that I think we should always ask, and our clients should be asking us, and if they aren't asking us, we should ask them to ask us, if that makes sense, is how does that work and why am I doing it? Rather than just we're going to do sprinting or we're going to do push-ups or we're going to do chin-ups, how do they work and why are we doing them? These are two really important questions. And I think they're also really important questions from the MAX program. You should never just accept information. You should always say, how does that work and why do we do it that way? From an anatomy and physiology point of view, if you can't answer the question yourself, then you really need to go and do some more study and ask some more questions. And it's all obviously based on anatomy and physiology. So how does it work and why are we doing it that way? So that's what tonight's about. Not about what to think, but how to think for yourself and to always ask those two questions, how and why. So my first question for everybody is, do you want to have a fast fat burning machine for the rest of your life? Now, it's really easy to lose fat, lose weight, get into great shape for a short period of time. And we've all seen people do that. They've won a Biggest Loser competition and won $100,000, or they've gone in a 12-week challenge and won a trip to America, or there's a whole heap of reasons why people lose weight. Tonight's not about doing this for a short period of time, get your photo taken, stand on stage in a bikini and then put the weight back on again. Tonight's about being a fast fat burning machine for the rest of your life. So if that's what you want to do, then we're in the right group of people. Does that sound good? Awesome, I'll take that as a yes. The next question then is not just about fat loss, because we often talk about the human frame from the outside in. So we talk about putting wrinkle cream on for our skin and we burn fat, and then we seem to forget that there's muscle underneath there, but even more importantly, there's bone. As fitness professionals, if we looked at this from a different angle and we came from the inside out, so I need to look after my bones, I need to look after my muscles, which will then burn off the fat. And if I keep in great shape then and eat high nutritious food, then I'm going to have great skin. So if we could do a reverse, rather than I'm going to look good from the outside, how about we look good from the inside? I'll just mute whoever we've got there making a noise. Okay, so if everybody can just think of your body now from the inside out. I've got bone, I want to look after it and protect it and keep it strong because it's the foundation of my body. Then I'm going to keep my muscles strong and maintain them, so I've got a fast metabolism. And then I'm going to have very little fat because my muscle is what burns the fat off. And then if I keep my body in great shape, then I'm going to have awesome skin as well. So does that sound fair enough to everybody? The next question, which is my favorite question of all time, and I ask it every time we get together, is, as a fitness professional, as a human being, have you chosen a size, a weight, and now a leanness level that you're really happy with, and you've decided that you're going to stay that way for the rest of your life? One of the challenges we've all got with our clients is this gain weight, lose weight, put on more weight, lose weight, put on more weight than I lost before. And that might not have happened to you, but it certainly has happened to many people. And most people have had enough of it. They've got skinny clothes and fat clothes, and they just, it's just all a downward spiraling cycle of depression when you don't think that you can keep the weight off for the rest of your life, or it's this big struggle. Tonight's about making sure that there's no struggle to be lean, healthy, fit and strong for the rest of your life. So as a fitness professional, if you pick a weight and you pick a size and you pick a wobbly level that you're happy with, then you're more likely to be setting the example for other people. So I really love this guy on the left. Can everybody see the screen tonight?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. I mean, this guy on the left, he's probably 20 and he's supposed to look like that. But very rarely do you see men on the right who look like that. We tend to let an old person move into our body, and we certainly don't have to. So the four things, and tonight is also about things that we're not going to argue about. In our profession, there's too many arguments about what's the right exercise and the wrong exercise and when you should and shouldn't eat and all the different controversial things. Tonight's about what we're not going to argue about. And no one is going to argue these four points. If you want to stay lean and strong and young for a lifetime, you need to obviously have a strong mind. You need to have a high level of fitness. You need to have strong muscles and strong bones. And the reason, if anything about that is controversial, if you go the other way around, which is if you want to get fat and be flabby and get old really fast, you have a negative attitude, because there's some people who are 25 but they seem to be already 75 because everything's a challenge in their life. If you are unfit, if you lose muscle and you lose strength, then you're going to get fat and flabby and old really fast. So tonight's about how do we stop that process and make sure that the four really important things are the ones that are happening all the time. So there's the two big questions. How do we exercise for fat loss to keep it off and stay long and strong and lean for a lifetime, and why will it work? And the only reason that what I can share with you tonight is the fundamentals of anatomy and physiology. So it's not about my opinion. It's not about, oh, I think this exercise is better than that one. It's about, remember, thinking for ourselves and then determining how does it work and why will it work. And they're the questions that you should always ask yourself. So the ingredients and the method for a lean, fit, strong, healthy body. How many people in the world do you reckon need our help? For those of you that are concerned that you might not have a successful fitness business, how many people do you think need our help to be lean, fit and strong for a lifetime? How many?
90% of the world.
Thank you, Abdul. 90% of the world, according to the latest statistics, there are not only 10% of people in the world have an exercise program that will keep them lean, fit and strong for the rest of their lives. So we've got some work to do. So the four things we're going to look at tonight for fat loss is your attitude towards your own body. Obviously, the food that you eat, we're not spending much time on that though, because Kayman spent a fair bit of time last week. We're going to talk a fair bit about fitness and a fair bit about strength directly in relationship to fat loss and being lean for a lifetime. So we're going to have a look at the first one, which is attitude. This is one of my favorite people, as most of you know. She's 81 years of age and still bodybuilding. from an attitude point of view, the number one thing that isn't argued when it comes to fat loss or anything to do with having a happy, positive attitude is that you have a purpose. If you've got a reason to get up in the morning, if you've got a reason to go to work, if you've got a purpose for being on the planet, then it's much easier to get up and go and do your thing. If you apply that purpose to then positive or negative, so if you've got a positive purpose, you're more likely to want to do the things that you do with your life, which and then of course will mean that you're more likely to want to be lean and strong for your life. We also get to choose whether we do things for a positive or negative reason. And I'm going through this tonight because in our profession in particular, there are lots of people that exercise for leanness or for fat loss or for a certain body fat percentage or just to look a certain way. But it doesn't seem to be positive. You see them in the gym and they're grumpy, or they're running along the road, they've got this grumpy look on their face. What I'm asking us as fitness professionals, if we really want to set the example for the 90% of people that don't exercise, is that we do everything we do for a positive reason. So rather than exercising for fat loss or calorie burning or how many steps did I learn to do today or what's my body fat percentage, what if we exercise for a positive reason, for being healthy, fit, strong, loving our body, loving the way we feel, and that look is on our face so that we set the example for other people. And then the other thing about attitude that's really interesting is that we are open to learning. And maybe that's easier for me to say because I'm 50, but what I now know, because when I was Abdul, when I was your age, I knew everything, just ask me. Now that I'm 50, I realize I know very little and I'm learning every single day. And I think if you wake up with an attitude of what can I learn today, what knowledge base can I develop today, how can I become better at what I do today, that your attitude will be different. So if you can get your headspace and your client's headspace into an attitude of I'm exercising to be lean and fit and strong rather than lose weight, burn calories, fit into my clothes, be a certain body fat percentage, then we'll have a different attitude toward our exercise program. So that covers number one. Number two, a good question to always ask yourself is, why do I eat? Now, there's lots of reasons for eating, obviously. There's energy, pleasure, to be lean, to be healthy. We eat for performance. They seem to be the healthy reasons. If we're eating because I want to have a low body fat percentage, or I'm eating because I want to attract a partner into my life, or I'm eating because I have to be a certain body fat percentage, then food becomes less about performance and more about the way we look. And if we can treat food like from a fat loss perspective, if we treat food like a fuel, so if I want my car to go to perform really well, I have to put good fuel in it. So the food, and there's this big argument in our profession about what percentage food is compared to exercise as far as fat loss is concerned. And some people will argue quite loudly, you know, it's 80% food and 20% exercise, or it's 50% food and 50% exercise. Well, it's different for everybody, but ultimately all food is a fuel so that we can perform. And if we're not performing well, then we have to look at the kind of fuel that we're putting in. So the same questions that I always ask all of you on a regular basis is, when you are eating or the food that you're currently decided to eat, number one, do you wake up with energy and maintain that energy throughout the day? Number two, are you performing at peak level for everything that you need to do every day? Number three, do you love what you see in the mirror, whether that's naked or not, but you have to be happy with what you see in or out of your clothes? And then, is what you're eating heading you towards the results that you want? So if you want to run a marathon, or you want to compete in a bodybuilding competition, or you want to be able to go skiing when you're 80, are you putting the right fuel in to do that? So it's less about calories and protein and carbohydrate and how much fat should I be eating. And you answer those questions. And if the answer is yes, whatever you're doing is brilliant. And if the answer is no, then you just need to adjust. What we won't argue about though with food, and this is all tonight's about, all I'm going to cover with food, is that there are certain science-based opinions, there are science-based facts on what the human body needs. And we can argue them as fitness professionals whether they're right or wrong. But the only argument we've really got is, if you feel fantastic, then you're doing the right thing. If you don't feel fantastic, then you need to adjust. And adjustment comes from, if you've got too much fat on your body, you might need to reduce the fat. If you've got too much, if you don't have enough energy, then you might need to eat some more carbohydrate. But they're all things that we don't have the right to tell people what to do. People have to work that out for themselves. So I'm going to leave food there. Just leave it as a fuel. For fat loss, food is simply a fuel to give us the energy to get our body moving, which then brings about fat loss. So if we then go to the main ingredients for being lean and being strong, in other words, having a lean, strong body for the rest of our lives, there are only two major ingredients, and they only happen by one thing. So that's about as simple as you can make it. We have to get fit and we have to have strong muscles. They're the two affecting factors of how lean we are and how strong we are, or how much fat loss we can maintain. So it's all about overload. So there's only two things we need to do and only one thing that does it. This is how simple it is. To get fit, you have to overload your heart. And to get strong muscles, you have to overload your muscles. It's that simple. You don't have to go into which exercise is the right or wrong one, or which is the best one for, I think last week there were some questions about, you know, is running better than swimming, and is swimming better than bike riding? And none of that matters. The only thing that matters is that if you want to have a lean, strong body, you've got to be fit and you've got to be strong. And then how do you make that happen? So as a fitness professional, if somebody says to you, how do we get fit and how do we stay fit, you have to be able to answer that question really, really simply. So without, and I'm not going to put anybody on the spot, but if somebody said to you, Roe, how do I get fit? What's the most simple way you could explain that? And then if you had to, what's the most easiest or simple way to explain how to stay fit? And it's this easy. Oh, look, we've got some very strong opinions. Let's go. How do we get fit?
I was going to say move more, eat less. Move more, eat less.
And I know I'm just... All I'm talking about now is fit. So your client says to you, how do I get fit?
What?
What was that, Martin?
Get yourself puffed.
Great answer. The only way to get fit is to get puffed. And you can. There's no argument about that from an exercise physiologist or a doctor or any personal trainer. Nobody can argue that if you want to get fit, you have to overload your cardiovascular and respiratory system. And the only way it gets overloaded is if you get puffed. Now, the beautiful thing about getting puffed is how long does it take? And I ask that question of audiences all over the world, literally, and I get anywhere between 10 seconds and 10 minutes. Now, if you're standing up like I am, I'm going to get everybody to do this. Unless you need to have running shoes on, which I don't think you do, all I want you to do is absolutely flat out as fast as you can, jog on the spot. So I'm just gonna say go, and I'm gonna do it too, and I want you to go as hard as you can. And if you don't want to use your legs, you can use your arms, and if you want to get puffed quicker, do both. So on your mark, get set, go. Hard and fast, hard and fast, hard and fast, hard and fast. Go, 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 go. Knees up high. Use your arms as well. Stop. If you put an effort in, you will be puffing, and that was 10 seconds. Now, the beautiful thing is that fit people get puffed really fast. Unfit people get puffed really fast. How long does it take to get fit? Sorry, to get puffed? 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
And it doesn't take any longer than that. And the reason we know that is the fastest man in the world runs 9.54 for 100 metres, and it's taken, he hasn't done that for 4 years either. And the only difference between an unfit person and a fit person is that the unfit person will take longer to recover. From a fitness perspective, there's two really important things to remember here. Your heart and lungs are blind. They have no clue what you're doing. The only way to get fit is to get puffed. And when you get puffed, this amazing thing happens. So there's a series of questions here that you have to be able to answer simply. So as we go through the questions, if I was your client and I asked you this question, you would have to be able to answer it to me in a really simple way. So if I'm fit, how does that affect my fat burning and my weight loss? How does it affect my metabolism? How does it affect my movement and activity? Does the speed of my huffy puffy, does that make a difference to my fitness? So can I go slow or fast? What kinds of muscle fiber types do I need to get fit, or what will I be using to get fit? And what's the hormonal response, which is what K-Man covered a little bit of last week, which is the number one key here. And this is my new favorite friend, is the Mr. Catecholamine. And the man in the blue t-shirt, I'm going to call him Mr. Catecholamine. So how do we get, from a fitness point of view, how does fitness affect my fat burning and my weight loss? And there is only a very simple answer to that. Does anybody want to give it a crack?
It just turns a little bit of your respiratory quotient through the fat from up.
Beautiful. So for those of you who haven't got to those sessions yet in the program, when you are a fit person, your body's respiratory quotient, which is where the calories are coming from, and that's the really simple explanation. So when I'm exercising or when I'm doing nothing, where are the calories coming from? And your respiratory quotient is a percentage of carbohydrate to fat. When you're a fit person, when you're sleeping, sitting down, doing nothing, your body prefers to burn fat than carbohydrate. And the beautiful, exciting thing about that is that your body can only store 450 to 500 grams, half a kilo of carbohydrate. But how much fat can we store?
Billions.
I just watched a program in America of a young lady who was 18 years of age and she was 600 pounds. That's a lot of fat. We have this enormous ability to store fat, but we can only store 450 to 500 grams, half a kilo of carbohydrate. So when you're sitting doing nothing, it's much better for your body to be burning fat than it is to be burning carbohydrate. And if you want to have a body that's a fat-burning machine for the rest of your life, then you want to have a respiratory quotient that loves burning fat, not carbohydrate. And that happens when you get fit. Is anybody else excited besides me? When you're fit, your body will burn fat at rest. When you're sitting doing nothing, your body burns fat faster. Tonight, if you're sitting down doing nothing and you're fit, you're burning fat faster than the folks that are here that aren't fit. And the only way to get fit is to get what?
Puffed.
And how long does it take to get puffed?
10 seconds.
So number one, that's the really important thing. From a metabolism point of view, the harder you exercise, the higher your metabolic rate goes up. Now, there's lots of argument, and if you have a look at the research studies, there's argument between no time after exercise to 48 hours, and some people even say 2 to 3 days after you do a hard exercise session of Huffy Puffy, you'll have a faster metabolism. In other words, it doesn't matter now about respiratory quotient, it just means that you'll be burning calories faster. Now, whether that's no time at all because you just had a really hard exercise session or it's 48 hours, nobody can really agree on that. But you will, because you are now, because you've gotten puffed, you've increased your metabolism. And as we know, normally we burn 1 calorie per minute. And those of you who ever do any calorie testing when you're doing any a Huffy Puffy on a machine, you know that instead of 60 calories in a minute, you can burn 2 or 3. Or you can burn 30 or 40. So you can increase the speed of your calorie burning significantly. And the harder you exercise, the more calories you burn. I'm going to say that again. The harder you exercise, the more calories you burn. Now, from a movement and activity point of view, if somebody is unfit, and just watch people, go to a shopping mall and watch people that are overweight and unfit, how fast do they move? How fast do they go up the stairs? Exactly. They stand on the escalator. They walk around really slowly. Every movement is slow. When you're fit, you can just do everything faster, which means you now burn calories faster and you have a faster metabolism. So how does fitness affect my fat burning? It turns my body into a fat burning machine, increases my metabolism, and makes it easier for me to move around. If you watch somebody that's really unfit, for instance, just recently I watched a guy bend down to pick up his golf ball and his face went purple just from picking up his golf ball. So he had to do that really slowly. Whereas if you're fit, you just bend down, pick it up, jump up, move around, and everything becomes so much easier. From a fitness point of view, speed is the only thing that we need to be concerned about. If you go, there's this ridiculous notion that you can exercise long and hard. Folks, that is impossible. You cannot exercise for a very long time hard. The longer you go, the easier your exercise becomes. And that's why even the people that do marathons at a really fast speed are still not as fast as the guys that run 100 meters. The shorter the exercise program, the harder and faster you can go. Now, the beautiful thing there is when you're fitter, you recover quickly, which means you can go again if you want to. So if you're an exercise addict who loves to exercise for a long time, you're still much better off from a fitness point of view doing 10 seconds hard, backing off, 10 seconds hard, backing off, 10 seconds hard, backing off, because you'll turn your body into a fat-burning machine. Now, the last two at the bottom here are the really exciting ones that I don't think we spend enough time on when we're chatting to our clients. When you go fast and hard, you're now getting into your phosphate system, your lactate system, which what kind of muscle fibers are we using? Type 2s or type 1s, A's or B's? Come on, Martin. Muscle fiber types when we go hard and fast.
Fast twitch.
That's correct. We're using fast twitch muscle fibers. Now, the challenge as we get older is that we all lose muscle tissue if we allow it to happen. But the ones that we lose the quickest and the fastest are the fast twitch muscle fibers, which means, and you'll see old people do this, they go for a walk instead of a sprint. They go slowly. They do yoga and they do Tai Chi and all slow things, which then again reduces their muscle fiber, type 2 muscle, fast fiber types. When you do hard and fast exercise, you're maintaining those type 2 muscle fibers, which are the fast twitch muscle fibers, which are the ones that keep you young, which means you can keep jumping and you can keep kicking and boxing and sprinting as you get older, which then you have a much higher hormonal response. Now, the hormonal response, the simple way to explain this is when the harder and faster you exercise, the more catecholamines you produce, which is the hormone that opens the fat cell. Come on, get excited with me. The hormone that opens the fat cell to take fat out of the fat cell and put it into the bloodstream so you can oxidize it off, you will produce more of those when you exercise hard and fast. Have we got it? So from a fitness point of view, if you want to burn fat fast, you've got to be the fitter the better. It's perfect for your respiratory quotient, increases your metabolism, you can move harder and faster in your normal activity. You activate your fast twitch muscle fibers, which keeps you younger, and you have a much higher hormonal response, so you, the fat comes out of the fat cell easier. So do we have to get fit to burn fat? Please say yes. Woohoo! Okay, so we need fitness for fat loss. Now, what's strength got to do with fat loss? And these, again, questions that we have to be able to answer to our clients really simply and easy for them to understand. So how does muscle strength affect fat burning and weight loss? How does muscle strength affect my metabolism? How does muscle strength affect my movement and activity? How does muscle strength affect the speed of my huffy puffy? How does muscle strength affect my muscle fiber types that I'm using? And if I have stronger muscles, what happens to my chance of injury? So from a strength point of view, muscle strength affects fat burning because if I lose my muscle tissue, I now have a slower metabolism. So up until, for all of us women that are here tonight, up until the age of 20, we are building muscle fibers, muscle tissue, and that's the amount of muscle we have. After the age of 20, if we don't do strength training, we're going to lose our muscle tissue. And that's why women get fat faster than men, because as a general group, we stop lifting heavy weight, or we just decide never to lift heavy weight after the age of 20 because we don't want to get bigger. Now, two things. One is we can't because we don't have testosterone, but after the age of 20, if we don't maintain our muscle strength, our metabolism slows down. From a movement and activity point of view, if I'm weaker, what happens to my ability to get on and off a chair, my ability to play golf, my ability to play tennis, my ability to play with my kids in the backyard, my ability to go skiing? What happens if I'm weaker? We slow down. And I think that's really interesting and really important take note for our clients is if you're not strong, you'll slow down. If you slow down, you burn less calories. If you burn less calories, you're more likely to get fat. From a speed of huffy puffy point of view, if you get weaker, you can't run anymore, you can't sprint anymore, you don't do fast activity anymore because you're weaker. You don't get on and off your chair fast anymore, you don't do anything fast anymore because you've gotten weak, which means you've lost your fast twitch muscle fibers, which means what happens to your chance of injury? Whoa. Now here's the big one. If you were walking along the street today and you tripped over something, and let's say we're Abdul and we're 19 years of age, if we trip and we're full of fast twitch muscle fiber, our fast twitch muscle fibers, which activate fast, they fire really fast, we push our foot out to stop us from falling over. As we get older, we lose our fast twitch muscle fibers because we don't lift heavy things anymore. So if we trip over, those fast twitch muscle fibers don't fire, so we fall over and we get injured. So if we're not strong, and if, by the way, if you're injured, what happens to your ability to burn fat? You can't do anything anymore because you're injured. You've got a sore shoulder or a sore knee or sore foot, so you can't do anything. So from a strength point of view and a fat loss point of view, if you want to have a fast fat-burning metabolism, you have to maintain your muscle tissue. You have to maintain your movement and activity, which only comes from muscle strength. Your fast, huffy, puffy comes from having strong muscles. And your muscle fiber types, the fast ones, come from doing heavy lifting and hard exercise. And your chance of injury is reduced if you maintain those fast muscle fibers. So I'm going to say it again. Is anybody as excited as me about, from a fat loss point of view, you have to be fit and you have to be strong. Would we all agree? So now comes the interesting question, because that's after that is when we tend to get into an argument. So what's the best way to get fit and what's the best way to get strong? Now, remember, tonight's about thinking for yourself and not about they're going to tell me what to do, because your MAX program is never, ever going to be about what should we do or what should we tell our clients to do. From a strength point of view, because obviously you can't do fast, huffy, puffy if you're not strong. How do we get people strong? And it's not about the exercises that we choose, and it's not about how often we train, and it's not about whether I should use dumbbells or barbells. It doesn't matter. The only questions we have to ask is this: how do we get or stay strong? How do we do that? There's only one answer. How does a muscle get strong and stay strong?
Heavy.
What was that, Marcin? There's only one answer. Overload is the answer. So if I can lift 20 kilos, for me to get stronger, I have to aim to lift 25 or 22 and a half or 27. If I lift 20 and I keep lifting 20 over and over, how can I get stronger? If my body's capable of lifting 20 and I keep lifting 20, how can I get stronger?
24.
Good. That's the only way. You have to lift heavier. Now, the beautiful thing about strength training, and I think this is the two things that people seem to forget when it comes to programming. Number one is that muscles can't count, and number two is that muscles can't see. So for somebody to tell you that you should do 3 sets of 10, or you should do 3 sets of 15, or you should do 5 sets of 20, they have absolutely no idea how many you can do. If somebody says to you, how many should I do of this exercise? The only answer that we could ever give is this: as many as you can. That's the only answer, because muscles can't count. And you don't even know how many you can do on the day, which is the difference between relative intensity and absolute intensity. Your relative intensity will be determined by how tired you are, how much food you've eaten, how much water you've drunk, how much sleep you've had, how stressed you are, how much adrenaline you've got pushing through your body. I'm sure many of you have seen where a guy thinks he can't do any more on a bench press, and then a good-looking girl walks past and he does 3 more. Now, that doesn't come from muscle strength. That comes from pure adrenaline and hormonal responses to the gorgeous girl that's walked past. None of us know what we're capable of doing until we actually do it. So for us to tell somebody that you should do 3 sets of 10 is irresponsible, because we could be underloading them. People don't get stronger unless we overload. So how many do you do? As many as you can, because muscles can't count. And then muscles can't see. Your muscles have got no clue whether you're lifting a dumbbell or a barbell or a bucket of sand or a tire or a person or a chair. Today I lifted my treadmill, and it was the heaviest deadlift I've done for a really long time, and I actually had to deadlift it to lift it up and move it. Your muscles can't see what you're lifting. All they respond to is overload. So when you're putting a program together to get somebody fitter and stronger for fat loss, so their body's a fat-burning machine for the rest of their life, all you've got to do is get their entire body strong. They've got to do as many as they possibly can, and they've just got to overload each muscle effectively. So then comes the third question, which is the safest and fastest exercises for getting the human body strong? Now, we could argue about that, and there's so many different programs, and you go to the gym and there's 75 different exercises for each muscle group. But there's some questions here again that we have to ask. So from a safest and fastest point of view to get strong, which is more important, whether we do more exercises or less? If I do 20 or 25 or 30 or 50 of an exercise, is it better for me to do more or less of an exercise?
Less.
And that's purely from, if you go back to your physiology, that's purely from the energy system point of view. The more you do, the more you get out of that energy system that produces the high hormonal responses, which is your phosphate and your lactate system. So if I want to get stronger, the safest and the fastest way, is it better to lift light or heavy? You have to lift heavy. The challenge with the really heavy, though, is if it's too heavy. And that's where the numbers come in, but it's the only reason that numbers should ever come in. So if somebody can't lift a certain weight 3 or 4 times, then it's probably too heavy from a safety point of view. But once you can start doing more than 20, apart from the fact they're going to get bored to tears, you're in the wrong energy system. So you've got to. That's the only only reason you have to play around with the numbers. Then is it better to work as many muscles at once or as few as possible? Is it better to do a little exercise for a little muscle or do a big exercise that uses all the muscles possible?
Yeah,
Now, before you answer the question, really give it some thought. Like, why did I answer the question that way? And it's not because the MAX program said it, that's how you should do it, or it's not because that's what I've read or I've heard or what Kayman said. Think about it from a logical, common sense point of view. If I use a large number of muscles at the same time, what do you think might happen to my hormonal response? Which is the catecholamines, testosterone, and human growth hormone, which is the things that make muscle grow, make them stronger, and obviously release fat out of the fat cell. And I'm using as many muscles as possible versus a tiny little muscle. Which one's going to give me a better hormonal response? You're going to get a much higher hormonal response if you can get an exercise where you're using as many muscles as possible. So if you think about that logically, if I have to pick something up off the ground and it's heavy, what muscle groups am I using? Am I using my arms? We'll just keep it simple. Am I using my arms to pick something up? Yes. Yeah. Am I using my abdominals and my lower back to support me from falling forward?
Yeah.
Yes. Am I using my back if I have to lift something up off the floor? And am I using all of my legs? So the heavier I can lift and the more muscles I use, and by the way, the more muscles I use, the heavier I can lift. Does that make sense? Because if I'm activating more muscles, I have more strength. And if I've got more strength, I can lift heavier weight, which means I'll have a higher hormonal response. So as fitness professionals, what we should be looking for are the biggest compound exercises possible so we can get as many muscles activated as possible. Now in an exercise, for example, like where I'm lifting something heavy off the floor, what would be the weakest link? What's the smallest muscle group that's going to get tired first if I'm lifting something heavy up off the floor? Your grip, absolutely, Robert. So your hands will get tired. What about my shoulders, my arms? What about my abdominals? So we focus a lot on the core. We focus a lot on the core, but all the stabilizing muscles, the ones that stop us from falling over, the ones that stop us from falling forward, the ones that stop us from dropping the weight, they're all the little muscle groups that get tired the quickest, which is why we don't have to go and train them later on, because they're the ones that have already been worked. Now, if we go to the next point, which is compression forces or shearing forces, which is better to go through the joint, where the pressure's going through the joint or across the joint?
Through the joint.
What happens if I put shearing forces across my joint? What's going to happen?
Pain.
You've got your higher risk of injury. Well done. And the beautiful example we always use is sandpaper. If I push two pieces of sandpaper together, nothing's going to happen. I'm just putting a force through two pieces of paper. But if I rub two pieces of sandpaper across each other or sandpaper across wood, I'm now going to wear the wood away, or I'm going to wear the sandpaper away. Shearing forces are the things that stop us from being able to exercise when we're 60, 70, 80, 90. So when you're 20 and 30, you probably don't care because you're bulletproof and you think, I could never get injured. But if you start putting shearing forces through your body at 19, 20 and 25, 30, by the time you're 40, you'll have now worn away joints, which for me, and as a fitness professional, I hope you think is irresponsible, because compression forces don't do that. So the next question is, from a real life movement or a dysfunctional movement, obviously our body's designed to work in a certain way. So if we're going to get strong for fat loss, and that's what tonight's about, I have to be fit and I have to be strong. To exercise fast to get fit, I have to be strong. So all I've got to do now is pick exercises that are going to use all of the muscles in my body in a functional manner with as heavy weight as possible. That's going to keep me within that, you know, 5 to 6 and no more than 20 age group. And then the other really cool thing is that from a functional movement point of view, the human body actually only has 3 movements. There's a push movement, a pull movement, and our lower body can lift itself up and down off the ground. So if I do an exercise for the front of my body, an exercise for the back of my body, and I use my lower body, and I lift as heavy as I possibly can, I'm now going to be using every single muscle in my body in the most functional way possible, which will then turn my body into a fat-burning machine, because I'll have high hormonal responses, and I'll maintain my muscle tissue so I'll have a fast metabolism. So is anybody as excited as me about strength training for fat loss? I cannot believe that we would possibly consider aiming to get fat off a person's body without getting them strong first. So that's that one. Now we're going to go to, again, some more questions that we need to ask from a fitness point of view and from an overall point of view. Now, these questions, and we've already answered them, we're just going to go through them again just to make sure. To be fit and strong, would I be focusing on a long exercise program or a short one?
Short.
We just want short. Now, for those of you that love to exercise for a really long time, from a cardiovascular point of view, you're still better off doing short, sharp bursts. Even if you go for an hour or 2 hours, you're still better off doing 10-second bursts to turn your body into a fat-burning machine. From a compliance point of view, getting people to actually want to exercise, we're better off giving them more to do or less to do. For those of you that love exercising, and I get that, because some people, we just do it because we absolutely love it. But will there ever come a time in our life, we might be on holidays or we might have children or we're busy with our work or something comes up in our life, will there ever be a time when we might not have an hour or 2 hours every day to exercise?
Yeah.
So if we knew that to maintain our strength and our muscle tissue and our fitness to be a fat-burning machine for the rest of our lives, if we knew the fundamentals of that was doing a short exercise program with a small amount of exercises, would we be more likely to stick to our exercise program for the rest of our lives? That's a great question to ask. Obviously, the next one's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Is it better to do something long and boring or fast and exciting? One of the big things about maintaining a fat-burning machine for the rest of your life is to be in the constant state of achievement. And there's something about sprinting. When you're, for instance, if you're on the treadmill or a bike or you're in the pool swimming and you think to yourself, I've got 10 seconds to go really hard and then I get to have a rest. So you go as hard as you can and then you have a rest. Versus I have to keep going, keep going, keep going for the next 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours. If it's short, hard and fast, and I use the marathon as an example, it's a bit of a joke for me. It's a 42-kilometre jog for a 200-metre sprint because the marathon's actually 42.2 kilometres. And the most exciting part of the marathon is the last 200 metres. And even if you're not sprinting, you feel like you are because you can't wait to get to the end. So ideally, as fitness professionals, and we want to get people fit and healthy and strong for a lifetime, we want to give them something that's fast and exciting so they can constantly measure, am I getting fitter, am I getting faster? Do we need to do light or heavy from a strength training point of view? Obviously, it needs to be heavy. From a huffy-puffy point of view, do we need to do it fast or slow? Obviously, it's fast. We want to use as many muscles as possible rather than as few as possible. And just as a hormonal response, we talk about doing bicep curls for big arms, but the size of your bicep is really small compared to an exercise like a chin-up where you're using your arms, your shoulders, your abs, your back, your face muscles, your toe muscles, your ass muscles as you pull yourself up. Everything's working as hard as possible, which means you now get a really great hormonal response, which means now from a human growth and testosterone point of view, blokes are going to get bigger and ladies, we're going to have a catecholamine response, which means our body will be releasing fat opening drugs. More or less chance of injury with compression forces or shearing forces. Obviously, you want to pick exercises that are compression forces, not shearing forces. Functional movement. And then last, which I think is really important, do we want to get people to do what they can do or what they can't find time to do? There's plenty of 45-minute exercise classes and one-hour classes and three sets of 10 and go to the gym 10 times a week and all of that stuff. But what can people actually do for the rest of their life? So it's not how much I can do. It's how little can I do to maintain my fat-burning machine for the rest of my life. So they're just some really great questions, and I'll send you the PowerPoint, by the way. So this is all we have to know about. It's not about designing an exercise program. You just have to ask these simple questions. What works best? Exercises that are unsafe or safe. Obviously, we're going to pick the safest possible exercises. From a huffy-puffy point of view, we're going to pick fast. From a lifting point of view, we're going to pick heavy. And then after that, we get to choose it for ourselves. So I'll go again. Don't do unsafe exercises. If you want to do them yourself personally, go ahead. But from a fitness professional's point of view, our number one rule is it will never injure our client, not now or not in 5 years' time or not in 25 years' time. So one of the really funny things I often hear fitness people say, and I wouldn't call them professionals, they'll put people on a leg extension or a tricep kickback or an isolated exercise, and they'll say, if you've got a sore knee, don't do this exercise. So don't do a leg extension if you've got a sore knee. Well, it's the other way around. If you have a knee and you do a leg extension, it will get sore, whether it's today or next week or 10 years' time, it will do an injury to your knee. So I want to pick safe exercises. We want to pick fast, huffy, puffy, and we want to pick heavy weights for lifting. After that, your muscles are blind and your heart's blind. So whether you like to swim or ride a bike or do rowing machine or do exercise classes or sprint in the park or run up and down soft sand, or it doesn't matter. From a lifting point of view, your muscles don't know whether you're doing a chin-up or a row or a cable row, or it doesn't matter. So you get to choose, and they're the really great questions to ask people. What do you like to do out of the three big exercises for your back? Chin-ups, rows, and lat pull-downs, which do you prefer? Out of the three best exercises for your chest, which are dips and bench presses and push-ups, which do you prefer? Out of the big exercises that work best for your legs, would you prefer to do lunges or squats or leg presses even? And find out, it's not about you can't do this or you have to do this, it's just pick the one that you like the most or the one that you hate the least. What fits into your time and into your life most effectively? So some people say, well, you know, I like to do an hour every day of exercise. By all means, go for it. But if you've only got 5 minutes, you'd still want to do something, wouldn't you? Because the more often you turn your body into a fat-burning machine, the longer you'll stay a fat-burning machine for the rest of your life. And then you get to choose whether you want to do exercises that protect your joints or injure your joints. You get to choose. But as a fitness professional, I'm asking you, please don't make those choices for your client. Don't say to them, oh, you can do a leg extension if you want to. Please explain the risks of doing a leg extension. Explain the risks of doing an upright row. Explain the risks of doing isolated exercises. And then they get to choose as well. But make sure they understand the risk of doing those exercises, the same as you. There's nothing about what we've done tonight that says you have to exercise this way or you have to do huffy puffy this way. Just be aware that there's three things that will make you a fat burning machine for the rest of your life: safe exercises, huffy puffy fast, and lifting heavy weight safely. And you will turn your body into a fat burning machine. To finish off tonight, this is the choice that we have. We can be lean, strong, and young, or we can be fat, weak, and old. And we get to choose. So I'm going to say that again. We can be lean, we can be strong, and we can be young, and we can stay that way for the rest of our lives. Or we get to choose whether we get fat, weak, and old. And all it depends on is how fit we are and how strong we are. And as individuals, we get to choose. And as fitness professionals, we get to help our clients choose what's going to be best for them. So that is the Lean, Fit, and Strong for a Lifetime. And I've kept you way past 30 minutes. So do we have any other questions for this evening? Please go if you have to, but I'm not going anywhere. If you've got questions, please stay.